So this afternoon, I'm going to discuss the secondary analysis that identified factors associated with frequency of responding to electronic surveys among students attending a large minority-serving university using data from the Student Behavioral Health Survey. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. So electronic surveys have gained popularity among researchers due to their numerous advantages over traditional survey modes. Electronic surveys require fewer financial and physical resources. They enable researchers to contact a larger number of potential participants, and they're favorable for collecting data on sensitive topics. Unfortunately, response overall to electronic surveys are estimated to be 11 to 20% lower than those of traditional survey modes. However, response is generally higher among student populations compared to the general public. And specifically, response is higher among non-Hispanic, white, and Asian students compared with their Hispanic and African-American counterparts. A number of factors have been associated with responding to electronic surveys, including respondent-related factors such as age, gender, race, and ethnicity, and design-related factors such as survey topic and length of survey. Now, the aim of this secondary analysis, as you can tell from the title, is to identify factors associated with a history of responding to electronic surveys among student respondents of the Student Behavioral Health Survey. Now, I want to take a few minutes to discuss the Student Behavioral Health Survey itself. There was two aims of the survey. One was to measure sensitive behaviors of the student population, including sexual activity and use of drugs and alcohol. The second aim was to increase student response using a two-factor experimental design. Now, many of you may be familiar with the National College Health Assessment Survey. It's a similar survey on sensitive topics that's administered to students nationwide. The National College Health Assessment Survey is administered to the student population at the same university that the Student Behavioral Health Survey was. It's administered every year in the fall semester. So you may wonder, if there's a survey, electronic survey, being conducted on a similar topic, why design and implement the Student Behavioral Health Survey? Well, the National College Health Assessment Survey was originally a paper-based questionnaire, and it was very successful at this university. However, in 2010, the National College Health Assessment Survey became an online survey, and since then, response has been very low. The highest response has been adopted in 2011, and that was at only 7%. So this was our motivation for embedding a two-factor experimental design in the Student Behavioral Health Survey. So the Student Behavioral Health Survey was administered over a 10-day period in March to April 2013 at a large minority-serving public university with a predominantly female and Hispanic student population. Pre-notification emails were sent to select students, which I'll discuss in a moment. Also, one invitation email and three reminder emails were sent to all students selected for the survey. 8,000 active student email addresses were randomly selected to participate in the survey, and these 8,000 students were randomized into four groups of equal size. All received invitations through email to participate. No incentives, were used in the survey. So the aim of the two-factor experimental design was to assess the use of pre-notification and improved email design on student response. So this gave us four treatment groups, which I will refer to as standard pre-notification, innovative, and innovative pre-notification. Improvements in email design that we specifically looked at was increased personalization of the emails. The two standard groups received emails that had a design that's typical, that you typically see in emails inviting one to participate in an online survey. So for example, they use subject lines such as introducing the Student Behavioral Health Survey, complete the Student Behavioral Health Survey. Email headers were generic, just stating a dot online consent to participate in a research study. It used the logo of the university and the school, and it simply closed by thanking the student for participating. The two innovative groups, however, utilized email design aspects that were meant to grab the students' attention, that were designed to hopefully get them to open the email and complete the survey. So, for example, subject lines included, why don't students respond? What do you think? Spam, it's not. Email headers included, this is your opportunity. We really want to know. We still really want to know. And we closed the email using the individual names of the survey research team. So this is an example. It's kind of small and hard to read, but you can see the two designs of the logos used. You can also see at the top, it's just very generic sender name, as opposed to on the right, we have the individual names of the survey team. Now, the overall response for the student behavior health survey was 8%. So it's not too much different from what you saw in the National College Health Assessment Survey. However, in the innovative pre-notification group, which utilized both pre-notification emails and improved email design, we achieved a 14% response rate. And this was 2 to 3 times higher than the response in the other three groups, as well as 2 to 3 times higher than the response in the National College Health Assessment Survey. And during an initial analysis of the survey data, we found that 1 out of 3 students who responded to the student behavior health survey claimed that they never or rarely respond to electronic surveys sent by the university. And the proportion of students who never or rarely responded was greater within the innovative pre-notification group compared to that of the other three groups. So this seems to suggest that there was something about the experiment, the use of pre-notification and or improvements in email design, that's attracting students who usually don't respond to electronic surveys. So this initial finding is what motivated the secondary analysis, which I'm now going to present. So just to remind you, the aim of the secondary analysis is to identify factors associated with history of responding to electronic surveys among student respondents in the student behavioral health survey. The study outcome for this secondary analysis was the frequency of responding to previous electronic surveys sent through the university email system. Responses were categorized as never or rarely, sometimes, and usually slash always. Associations between the outcome and factors were assessed using chi-square tests and binary logistic regression models. Using a two-tailed significant level of alpha is less than or equal to 0.05, and using SPSS version 19. So the median age of the student responders was 23 years. The majority were female, Hispanic, and single. A quarter of the students were employed full-time, and just under half were foreign born. The majority of students were also undergraduate students, mostly upper-class undergraduate. The majority also lived off campus alone or with family. And as I stated before, 1 out of 3 students claim that they never or rarely respond to electronic surveys sent by the university. So based on a review of the literature and on the variables available in the survey, we selected 15 factors with the potential to influence the frequency of responding to electronic surveys. After assessing their relationship with the outcome and analyzing collinearity, we selected 6 variables to include in our binary logistic regression models. Those variables were Hispanic ethnicity, gender, place of residence, class level, campus where the majority of classes are taken, and treatment group in the student behavioral health survey. And what we found was that frequency of responding to electronic surveys was significantly associated with with gender, class level, and treatment. The odds of never or rarely responding to electronic surveys compared to usually or always was double among male students compared to female students, double among upper-class undergraduate students compared to graduate and professional students. And the odds among students in the treatment groups which utilized either pre-notification and or improved email design was 2 to 3 times that of the students in the standard group. Now, we found similar results when comparing sometimes responding versus usually and always responding. As in the previous slide, the odds of sometimes responding to electronic surveys compared to usually or always was nearly double among males compared to females, nearly double among upper class undergraduate students. And again, the odds of sometimes responding among students in treatment groups that utilized the experimental modifications was 2 to 3 times that of the odds in the standard pre-notification group. So strengths of this analysis is that it used data from an online survey that was anonymous and confidential. Students were randomized into the treatment groups. We had a large overall sample size and a large sample within each treatment group. And we collected many demographic and school-related variables. Limitations were that all data was self-reported. Data was not available for the non-responders, so we could not compare non-responders to the responders. We also had difficulties in implementing the survey, which may have affected response within certain treatment groups. For example, the logo designed by the resource group was somehow corrupted, so some of the emails were just a jumbled mess in the innovative groups. Timing of the survey may have affected response. The survey was administered at the end of spring semester. This is a time when students are bombarded with projects and finals, and they've also, over the past 2 semesters, have been bombarded with other emails inviting them to participate in many surveys. Also, since this was a secondary analysis, some factors associated with frequency of responding were not available, so we cannot rule out residual confounding. So in summary, low response to previous electronic surveys sent by the university system were more prevalent within treatment groups that received the pre-notification and or improved email designs. After adjusting for other covariates, the odds of infrequently responding to previous electronic surveys were significantly higher among students in the standard pre-notification, innovative, and innovative groups compared to those in the standard group. This suggests that improved email design and the use of pre-notification emails may be promising methods of increasing response among students who infrequently respond to electronic surveys. This, in turn, can reduce bias in student response to electronic surveys. Thank you. So we do questions.
Time left over. We'll do about 5 minutes of questions and Does anyone have any questions for Ms. Wilcox?
Yeah, I enjoyed the presentation.
Thank you.
And I saw, good results in terms of the interaction of the two more intensive procedures. How old again was the field period, and were there some reminders in terms of
Yes, the survey was conducted over a 10-day period. Students in the both pre-notification groups received a pre-notification email telling them, hey, be on the lookout, you're going to receive an email invitation. All 8,000 students received an invitation email with the link, and then all students also received 3 reminder emails. Now, these emails were planned to be sent at 48-hour intervals. It didn't end up being exactly 48 hours. This was actually a student project, so it was a team of 9 graduate students. So the school's student resource center actually had to be the ones to send out the emails. So unfortunately, they were delayed or sent them only in some instances.
So just to follow up, what would be very interesting would be to see your response profiles every day and see if there was something that really happened towards the end of the interaction group, or it'd just be informative.
Yes.
Have you done that analysis?
Yeah, actually last year at APHA I had a poster presentation where I presented the results just as in terms of the response rate, and I had a graph. Unfortunately, I don't have it on this slide, on this presentation. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the presentation. Really interesting.
Thank you.
Bit about the difference between the two letters and were there some design factors?
the major modifications we used was the sender name. So instead of, usually, I mean, I know as a student that we get quite a few emails asking to participate in surveys. Usually they're just generic from the university or from maybe a certain college. We use the individual names of the survey team. So they just, students wouldn't just discard it, oh, it's another email from the school. We also tried to change up the email subject lines. So as I said, to grab their attention. And then same thing with email headers when they opened it up. And the closing of the email. Now, all of these emails compared to the emails used in the National College Health Assessment Survey, all of our emails were shorter. They were maybe half as long. I can tell you in the National College Health Assessment Survey, they had pretty lengthy email with the link at the bottom. We included the link after a short introductory paragraph, so we introduced what absolutely needed, the students needed to know. What was the survey about? That it was voluntary, that they could, you know, discontinue the survey anytime. And then we had the survey link. Maybe I can go back. And then we went on to discuss additional details of the survey. So if you see on this was done on in both the standard and the innovative groups, but you can see the survey link after a short paragraph and then additional information at the bottom. The main response?
The survey, right? When you say the survey, if they participate in the survey, because you're using an ANOVA model, there's a response variable, there's a check.
Well,
what was your response variable?
Well, we just, using the ANOVA was to test the difference in response rate. So we knew that there were 400 students in each treatment group, and we knew how many responded, and then thus we knew how many did not respond. So that's how we tested differences in the response rate. But actually that was not for this secondary analysis, that was a line that should have been removed, yeah.
I was just curious about the response
for that. I can see outcome variables easiest to do that in the survey, like the sexual...
Is that what you're asking, the actual questions in the survey?
Yeah.
Okay.
The ANOVA, you have a response variable and the factors, you know,
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So it was the outcome was response. So did they respond or they didn't respond, the number. And then the factor was the treatment group.
That's my question. How are you going to use the ANOVA if it's response against no response?
But, yeah, the exposure or the second variable was the treatment group. So which group were they assigned to?
That's exactly.
Well, we included not just two treatment groups, we included all four treatment groups. So we used the ANOVA to do post hoc.